Iran has ruled out linkage between a new EU mechanism to trade with Tehran, bypassing U.S. sanctions, and an anti-money laundering bill. Additionally, the EU said it is concerned by Iran's ballistic missile program and regional policies, while calling for it to implement reforms to comply with the FATF demands. In this debate, we will look at whether Britain, France, and Germany have overstepped their boundaries, which, according to Iran, has nothing to do with the mechanism known as INSTEX.
As the long-awaited EU's payment channel with Iran is implemented, new challenges emerge in the way of keeping the landmark nuclear deal alive. Last week, the three European signatories to the 2015 Iran nuclear deal, France, Germany, and Britain, implemented the so-called Instrument in Support of Trade Exchanges, or INSTEX, which facilitates non-dollar trade with Iran, allowing European companies to trade with the Islamic Republic without being hit by the U.S. sanctions. While in its statement announcing the move, the EU said that it wants the 2015 nuclear deal alive. It placed some preconditions. The mechanism requires Iran to accede to the Financial Action Task Force, or the FATF, which is an international body in charge of combating money laundering and financing terrorism. To become operational, INSTEX also requires Tehran to stop its missile program. On Tuesday, Iran's foreign ministry issued a statement on the EU's mechanism, reading that Iran's defense activities, including its missile program, are solely based on the doctrine of deterrence. The statement also read that the FATF has nothing to do with INSTEX and the JCPOA. Here in the Iranian parliament, lawmakers also slammed the EU's mechanism.
For 9 months, we have been waiting for the EU to come up with a way to convince us that the deal benefits Iran. But what it did was to accuse Iran of creating tensions in the region. Yesterday, I told Mr. Zarif that we never accept this humiliation.
INSTEX will enable the import of basic goods such as pharmaceutical and agricultural products to Iran. This is good, but not enough, as it does not address limitations in Iran's banking transactions.
INSTEX comes following months of talks between Iran and the EU to find ways to save the landmark nuclear deal after the U.S. unilaterally pulled out of the accord in May last year. Despite Washington's withdrawal, Iran has not left the deal yet, but stressed that the remaining signatories to the agreement have to work to offset the negative impacts of the U.S. pullout for Iran, if they want Tehran to remain in it.
Iran has and will stay in the deal as long as it benefits it economically. So far, the EU has not bought a drop of oil from Iran. If this trend goes on, there is no point in staying in the deal.
Iranian officials say they do not accept the EU's preconditions regarding INSTEX. They believe the EU proved to be still dependent on the U.S. and its foreign policies, as it is placing exactly the same conditions that Donald Trump once did, before he left the deal. Iranian officials say INSTEX is part of the EU's obligations under the JCPOA. Now, given the fact that the EU's initiative comes with a 9-month delay, Iran says Europe is in no position to set conditions for Iran to stay in the deal. Youssef Jalali, Press TV, Tehran.
Our guest joining us for this edition of the debate, political commentator and former American intelligence linguist Scott Rickard, joins us from St. Petersburg, Florida. And also author and lecturer Jonathan Fryer joins us from London. Gentlemen, I'd like to welcome you both. Jonathan Fryer, let me first start with you. Tell us exactly what Europe has done. What was the purpose behind this special financial channel that it has created?
Well, the INSTEX channel was created basically to facilitate trade between European countries and Iran, to bypass the American sanctions, and that's one reason, of course, why it's a non-dollar agreement. They will use other currencies. And the EU is very keen that this should go ahead. European companies want to be engaged with Iran, but the problem at the moment, as was clear from your initial report, was that in a sense the European Union is trying to reconcile two irreconcilables. It really wants trade with Iran. It really wants the 2015 Iran nuclear deal to succeed, despite the Americans having pulled out. But on the other hand, because Europe is close to America, close to Washington. It wants to somehow reassure Washington that it is keeping Iran under scrutiny, if we put it like that, but not only with the missiles, but also accusations of alleged assassinations of MEK opposition people in your various member states in Europe. So they're trying to reconcile these two very difficult positions.
Well, Scott Rickard, obviously Iran has had problems with the mechanism itself. It was long overdue. And at this point, it seems like we don't have Scott Rickard. Jonathan Fryer, Iran is complaining about what has occurred. Not only has it been late in terms of its delivery, there are also problems with what it represents at this stage. I don't know if you know exactly the details behind what this representation is, and that is the exchange of goods that are non-sanctioned. So in that case, Jonathan Fryer, what did Europe exactly deliver then?
Of pharmaceuticals in particular is one sensitive area, and foodstuffs. I can quite understand that there is an Iranian wish for the trade to be stepped up in other areas as well. Of course, Iran is subject to certain international sanctions still, but mainly from the United States. And this is a situation that the Europeans will have to negotiate further with Tehran to see exactly what can be traded and how quickly. But I think the important thing to underline is there really is a sincere wish on the European side to make this INSTEX work, to make the system work, and to somehow manage to keep good relations with Iran while not, in a sense, over-offending Washington.
Okay, at the same time, does Europe or the EU realize what it is doing? I mean, basically, it's giving Iran something that Iran could otherwise get. We're talking about non-sanctioned products, like food and medicine. That is not supposed to be sanctioned. So in that sense, if you were the people around this administration in Iran who had their hopes on the nuclear deal, which obviously got jeopardized with the U.S. leaving, and to end up after all this time with what the EU has presented so far, wouldn't you be disappointed?
Well, I can understand a certain degree of disappointment and also frustration at the delay, but we have to recognize that it's taken several months for the lawyers to work out, international lawyers to work out how the European companies could bypass American sanctions without themselves becoming victims of American sanctions. Because the Americans, not for the first time in this sort of situation, have been quite punitive in their action towards other countries that wish to trade with a country that is the subject of American sanctions. And they've made very clear that they would like, if they could, to block other countries trading with Iran, which the Europeans find unacceptable. So part of the delay has been bringing in a system and the INSTEX facility that can bypass legally the American sanctions and make sure that European companies aren't then taken to court by the Americans.
I do have to say that Tehran has welcomed the European Union's positive positions on this, Jonathan Fryer, regarding the 12-point statement that it has made. But let's get on with the points that it has been very critical of. And that is the association that the EU has made, and that is regarding Tehran's ballistic missile program, also regional policies for starters. Iran has said that we're not going to negotiate those. And that's not a new stance by Iran. Iran has always maintained that stance. Does Iran have a right to do that?
Well, Iran certainly has a right for self-defense. Every country does. And I'm aware, of course, that Tehran has argued that the missile tests and missile development are purely for defensive purposes and would not be capable of delivering any nuclear facility were any nuclear facility ever to be developed. But of course, the whole system of the missiles is under intense UN scrutiny, and it's important that the UN decisions on that are respected. So again, there has to be some balance found where Iran can indeed enjoy the privilege of being able to defend itself without over-alarming the international community.
You don't think that Iran is complying with the UN? I mean, it is, isn't it? The IAEA is part of the UN. IAEA has, for the 12th or 13th time, announced Iran's compliance with the JCPOA or the nuclear deal. And it is one of the most stringent, inspection regimes ever imposed on a country.
Absolutely. No, I'm very well aware that the IAEA has been very supportive in its reports, and I understand that that is very important for the Iranians to know that. I think really what the Europeans were doing was more of a warning than a protest at the sort of current situation. I think there is always at the back of some countries' minds, notably the French, that Iran could develop further range missiles or in some time in the future nuclear capacity that would be a threat to conceivably even Europe, but more likely Israel. And the French in particular are very sensitive about that issue, that they want to make sure that Israel is protected.
Okay, let me reintroduce Scott Rickard, who joins us on the phone from St. Petersburg. He's a political commentator and former American intelligence linguist. Scott Rickard, we are looking at a delayed response for a financial mechanism that doesn't involve finances at this stage, only involving basically goods. And these are non-sanctioned goods, of which Iran has criticized the EU for. At the same time, it has welcomed the EU for finally enacting it, so trying to balance its critique in that sense. Initial thoughts about what the EU has presented after all this time?
Well, my thoughts are that the EU is basically placating a softer base within their respective countries that understand the commercial aspects of cutting off complete ties with Iran, but at the same time, the humanitarian component. But that being said, they're also placating the pro-Israel lobby and certainly the pro-NATO initiatives. Certainly, you look at Italy and Greece, who were actually permitted to buy oil under the waiving of the sanctions, have refused to buy oil. And the production of oil in Iran has actually dropped 20% from October to December. So the massive impact that it's having financially is just tremendous. And the EU is really cooperating on a great extent. And this is really just a minor component. And for Iran to be heavily disappointed in the European Union really cooperating so heavily with these sanctions is absolutely warranted. The EU has fallen in lockstep with the pro-Israel lobbies in their respective countries, and certainly has gone in lockstep with the United States military-industrial complex influences within their respective countries. So this has been a huge failure for the European Union, and unfortunately a massive gain for the aggressive nature of U.S. foreign policy that sadly has been going on since 1979. These economic war crimes and economic warfare events have been just tremendously used to just ruin countries. Certainly Venezuela is a good representative of that, and unfortunately Iran and Russia and other countries have been victims to that same atrocious warfare, economic warfare.
Jonathan Fryer, we need to mention how hard actually the EU has worked on this. Looking at the setup of the what's called INSTEX, it's a France-registered limited liability entity. It's headed by a German banker. Germany, France, and the UK at this point were the ones, obviously, in cooperation with each other who brought this mechanism. And they have stated they want to start this out cautiously in terms of how they want it to be executed. And again, focusing initially on the supply of essential goods, as they want to call, like pharmaceuticals and food. So they have taken this time to actually do this. Do you take their efforts sincere when it comes to what it should ultimately do, which is to support financial transactions? Or do you think that they actually are doing this to send a message to the United States?
Well, I think it's a bit of both, quite frankly. I mean, certainly there is the element of sending a message to Washington that Europe is, in a sense, keeping Iran under a watchful eye, but at the same time, Europe wishes to be fully engaged with Iran. So it's also a message of almost of warning to Washington that, you know, that Europe is not going to fall in line. I think it was quite a shock for Donald Trump that the European countries, including the three large members of the European Union you mentioned, have really been united on this issue and have stood up against Washington. I have to say, I don't quite agree with Scott's comment that the thing is a massive failure for the EU. I think it's in a sense half-hearted, and that's how it's been seen in Tehran at the moment. Personally, I would like to see that in the future there will be more trade in oil, and indeed that the financial sanctions and blockings would be removed. And I think that will come with time, particularly if, of course, at some stage there is a change of administration in Washington. But so long as Donald Trump is there, of course, we have this really aggressive anti-Iranian propaganda coming out of Washington and increasingly strong support for the State of Israel. And Washington and Europe, in a sense, is caught in the middle between the rhetoric of both sides in those conflicts.
So, Scott Rickard, you had a disagreement there from Jonathan Fryer, even though the last statement there made by Jonathan Fryer was actually pretty eye-opening in terms of the way that he described the Trump administration and Israel's, I guess, desires.
Well, absolutely. There's the key component there. Well, you know, he also recommended that it was half-hearted, when in fact it's a hostage situation. The United States is holding hostage alongside their lobbying organizations, the EU governments, to actually agree to these illegal sanctions. These hostages are also willing, the individuals who are basically complicit in the war crimes and also economic warfare crimes against not only Iran, but these are also the same people who have supported war against Syria, who are supporting war against Yemen. And these are also individuals who have been cooperating very heavily with the United States in economic and military operations elsewhere around the world. So, no, this is a huge failure. I will continue to say that for the EU sovereignty and the sovereignty of those nations. They have been cooperative partners, unfortunately. The United States, France, and England have been cooperative partners since the Spanish-American Wars. So this is a really serious situation that the rest of the world has to endure, and obviously Europe is being held hostage as a part of the relationships that that grew out of World War I and World War II.
Jonathan Fryer, can you please elaborate a little bit more on the part that you said that they're going to wait out the administration of Donald Trump, if I understood you correctly? If that's what you said, what were you saying exactly, if you can put that back into the conversation here?
Yes, I mean, I think there is definitely a feeling here in London in particular, but I suspect in some of the other European capitals as well, that Donald Trump's time in the White House is limited. He's obviously now exactly halfway through his term and what he would like to be a first term, but he's under such enormous domestic scrutiny with various cases going on. There's a growing feeling in Europe that probably he won't last until the end of his mandate, and that, I have to say, would be hugely welcomed by most people in Europe. It is true, as Scott said, that historically Europe and not least Britain has been very, very closely allied to the United States. But Donald Trump has been the exception that proves the rule, in the sense that there was deep worry in this country and on the continent of Europe when Donald Trump was elected. And his policies since then, including ratcheting up the rhetoric against Iran, are ones which are rejected by most of the European governments and have been a great concern, particularly here in London. Now, obviously, the Prime Minister of Britain, Theresa May, Conservative government, is not going to say so overtly in public to criticize the American president, but that is certainly the feeling in the corridors of power as well as on the street.
Well, Scott Ritter, let me ask you, what would you do if you were Iran? I mean, here you have EU that seems to be showing goodwill at the same time associating this Instex, with human rights violations, with Iran's missile program, and also regarding what many people still don't understand when the U.S. and the EU, in this case, important, refer to Iran's instability or behavior in the region, which creates instability, when it's really not Iran doing this at all. Associating those two together at the same time, what would you do if you were Iranian officials here?
Well, unfortunately, Iran's hands are tied. You have to take what you can get at this point when it comes to the European Union. Certainly, one of the larger trading organizations around the world, get as much as you can out of that for your economic survival. At the same time, increase your relationships with the BRICS nations. Absolutely consider joining BRICS. Do something that you can to control your economy. And don't think that because Donald Trump goes away that the problems go away. The problems are a lot deep-rooted, more than Donald Trump can even imagine. He skims the surface. Pence would be no better replacement, his vice president. And there's a load of individuals just like Donald Trump clawing at the gates of the American government, and they're certainly not slowing down in their growth in their anti-Iranian rhetoric, not just in the Trump administration, but certainly you have the same in the Democratic administration in the United States. So it's a deep-rooted problem. Trump is just the surface of the problem, and certainly when it comes to economic warfare, you know, the Iranians have been survivors since 1979. You'll continue to survive, take what you can get, and basically continue to get the message out about the atrocious nature in which the world has treated the Iranians since 1979.
Yes, and that is, of course, something that John Bolton, the U.S. National Security Advisor, Jonathan Fryer, was quoted as saying a while back, that Iran is not going to see its 40th anniversary of its revolution, and here he has proven wrong. However, we are looking at the EU. I think, if you agree, the ball is in the EU's court. I'm guessing the ultimate objective here is for Iran, for this nuclear deal to be saved, because of what Europe and the world and the five signatories thought, which was false, Iran's pursuit of nuclear weapons. The JCPOA is supposed to have solved that problem. At this point, for the sake of Iran, and I'm not saying that it is going to or it has been discussed, but I'm sure it's one of the options that they contemplate on, and that is whether they should stay in this deal or not. Shouldn't the EU take that step, under 1 minute, to ensure the deal is saved?
Well, I think Europe is really extremely keen that the deal is saved and would wish to have the strongest possible negotiations to make sure that that happens. And as I say, perhaps to progressively open the sorts of things that can be traded. So clearly the will is there on the European side, and there is a wish really to ensure that the situation, the tense situation in much of the Middle East, is not aggravated by further polarization, which unfortunately is what Trump, Pence, Bolton and the whole package in Washington seem to wish to do. Propel.
Thank you so much for that. Political commentator and former American intelligence linguist Scott Ritter spoke to us from St. Petersburg, Florida, and author and lecturer Jonathan Fryer spoke to us from London. Thanks for tuning in to another edition of The Debate. From Mikhail Vitaly and the entire team in the capital, Tehran, is goodbye.